John Herron for AM 1290.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Dula and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm glad to see you again. It's been 2 weeks. We were repeating last week because of the horrible mudslides, and I have not seen my home since the last time I saw you.
I know. It's been a very sad and devastating time in our community.
And hopefully things will start to get better soon.
Yes, and for all of you listening out there, today we have John Tyne, a guest who's an attorney, broker, and professor of law with us. John, thanks for being with us here.
You bet. It's nice to see you both. And Richard.
And Richard, of course. And our topic today will really be about how the mudslide and fire and all of the questions. So if you do have any questions out there, feel free to give us a call at 564-1290, and I'm sure John would be happy to help you navigate this situation.
One thing that's interesting, you've both mentioned the word mudslide, and mudslide is actually not the right term for what we've experienced here. There's a distinction between mudslide, which is generally based on earth movement and is sometimes covered from earthquake insurance policies and things of that nature, which is a dry event, versus mud flow, which is water carrying mud and debris and boulders and the like down. And this is a mud flow event, which we say is caused by the Thomas Fire. It's the efficient proximate cause of this was the fire.
And so, like, to compare and contrast with, say, La Conchita, was La Conchita a mudslide or was La Conchita a water flow?
La Conchita, if I remember correctly, was also related to rains that had come.
Yeah, it was.
That was mud flow that had come down as a result, but that was a flood. So mud flow can sometimes be covered by a flood insurance. But here we're directing folks to make fire claims because without this fire, we would not have experienced the damages that we have seen in our community.
Right. And we'll get to that. We'll get to the differences of flood insurance. And if you have any questions, feel free to give us a call. So first, Neil, let's start with some articles.
So the first article is interesting in that it talks about the importance, which is ironic since we're living in a small town here, the importance of big cities to economic growth. And this is about a study that was made that goes back to 1850 that shows that there is a relationship between the growth of cities and economic growth for the country. And the reason for that is, and this is true in developing countries all over the world, as business begins to thrive, whether it's because of the steam engine or because of technology, the other extreme in the Bay Area, people will look to those places to get the best jobs with the highest productivity. And so there's been a correlation between people moving to those cities that are the center of economic development for whatever reason. And what this study found is that...
You're not trying to just be New York-centric here?
Well, I'm thinking, you know...
the accent and all, kind of.
All I can say is I bought here 19 years ago, and my broker never told me this could happen. So the proximate cause of this is my broker not telling me that I was at risk. I thought I was escaping New York to a safe place. No, I would never leave Santa Barbara. It's too nice. The article talks about how... And this is sort of, you know, relevant in a way to Santa Barbara. The high cost of housing is really taking some of GDP growth potential away because what should be happening and what's happened over the last 200 years is that workers went to those places with the best jobs, the best opportunities. But because rents are so high and housing prices are so high in those areas, and we don't have to list them, but they do, you know, whether it's Charlotte, Boston, San Francisco, New York, San Jose, prices are so high, the expected number of people moving to these places has been reduced, and so economic growth is suffering. So people are stuck wherever they were, not earning enough money, and people who would benefit from the opportunities that exist in these big places are not able to move here.
Well, and I also think that that's a central theme in Santa Barbara as well. Many of the big companies, they get to a certain growth point and they end up moving their headquarters because the cost of living here, especially due to the housing, prevents or precludes them from being able to get the best and brightest talent.
Next article, which again, given the first word of the article, is relevant to this, to at least the community I live in. It says, aging population supports...
The bubble in which you live.
The bubble I used to live in. The aging population supports bonds. And what this article tries to do is relate the fact that interest rates are lower than they should be given economic expectations. And this, they believe, is because people who are older, and I, you know, we can define what older means, but older people, and as the population ages, there are more older people, tend to want to be in bonds.
Well, I think the interesting part here is, as we've talked about throughout my career, basically, talking about the baby boomers and how there are so many of you, and when you retire, and when the baby boomers, you know.
What do you mean by you?
I'm sorry, Neil. I forgot you were in your 20s. Millennials, you're right. In a different category.
Right.
But there are so many baby boomers that they've really redefined the economy of what happens. And they're proving that point also with bonds. And bonds tend to be that safety play. And so you do a safe to help mitigate the risks that you take on your stock side of things. And there are so many baby boomers that have recently inherited wealth through the wealth transfer of the previous generation. You're seeing the bonds continue to be keep interest rates low.
It's actually interesting because we're seeing a trend with baby boomers in the real estate world where it sounds to me like they're moving to bonds because less risk. They're trying to get into less risk. And as we age, we take less risks. There's a big move toward downsizing right now, not just the Matt Damon film, but also people leaving their 14, 15,000 square foot homes and really going after these homes that are in the 4,000 to 5,000 square foot range. There's a new market.
Clearly not in Santa Barbara.
Well, Montecito, certainly. But there's been a trend toward leaving the larger estates and moving toward a smaller estate, maybe with less land, less maintenance.
Now, part of that is because the younger generation doesn't have the money that the older people have. There's been the distribution of wealth here is very skewed. Interesting thing about what we just discussed is how older people want less risk, but I could maintain that they're taking more risk because there's no question at some point interest rates are going to go up. And there's sort of a paradox here. People are expecting the economy to grow because of the tax cut and the stock market's going up. But all that means, if you buy that, and if that turns out to be the case, interest rates are going to go up. And therefore, your bonds, because...
But I think there's a distinction between what your time frame of that you're planning on holding your bonds. So if you're buying 30-year bonds, absolutely, that is a very risky play. But if you're buying 2-year bonds, 18 months. If you're buying short term, it is still the safest way to go.
That's true, but the article is talking about actually affecting interest rates where people are going out and the 10-year yield is being affected by this. And that's a little bit, of course, if you're 80 years old, you know.
What do you care?
What do you care? Exactly. The fiduciary rule is something we've talked about many, many times, and that is something that...
And this is such a disgusting article, I think,
thank
in
you.
Terms of
thank you for,
of its of the fact that people did this. Sorry, I don't mean to go ahead, but... Sorry.
So the fiduciary rule, to me, is something that if I didn't know better, I would think that I'm making this up. But up until now, the responsibility of a stockbroker was to basically not to worry about necessarily the individual interests of the client, but under certain circumstances, he was or she was immune to certain general concepts about looking at your client first.
Well, basically what it is the difference between suitability. Can you afford to do this? Is it suitable for you? And what's in your best interest? Now, you know, it's by law, the brokers need to do what's suitable for them, mm-hmm. not what's in your best interest. And that's really wrong in and of itself. But then this article goes on to talk about that when the fiduciary rule was posted, that there was a lot of fake comments or critics of the rule, as opposed to it being, you know, us individuals saying, oh, I like this rule because it provides more protection for me, that people have to now do what's in my best interest, not just if I can afford to do it. That this article, it was a study that showed that many of these comments that were critical, or these letters that were written that were critical of the fiduciary rule, were really bots and not people. They were actually companies, paid organizations to make fake criticisms of the rule.
Yeah, to be specific, the Labor Department had asked for comments from the public about whether or not the fiduciary rule was a good or bad thing. And what they found when this company went in and called people who had responded that the fiduciary rule was not important, they found that 40% of those calls were phony. And so somebody was paying to have these statistics faked to make it sound like the public really didn't care, which I think is outrageous.
And it's just a disgrace, because really the fiduciary rule was created to protect Joe Q investor, to make sure that they were being taken care of and their trust was being placed in somebody that actually had their best interest at heart.
So many other occupations, this is John, so many other occupations abide the fiduciary rule, right? Real estate brokers have a fiduciary duty to their clients. Attorneys have a fiduciary duty to their clients.
And financial advisors, as in where I practice, Arlington Financial Advisors, we also are bound by the fiduciary rule. It's just the brokerage side of things that aren't.
And I think the distinction for the layperson is the suitability versus best interest is, can you do it versus should you do it? You know, could you do it versus should you do it? Could you afford this investment?
Right.
That's a different question altogether than should you purchase this investment?
Absolutely.
So I've been doing one of my two radio shows for 4.5 years, and this show almost 2 years. And John is the first guest that actually did the right thing. He said, "This is John," before he spoke. I've never had a guest do that, which is, you know, on television, your name appears below, but in a radio, unless you know the person's voice. So, John, I have to tell you, that is a very professional thing to do.
Thanks.
And this is Neil speaking, by the way.
And in case you didn't know, he doesn't have a New York accent either.
Oh, you mean, are you saying that we wouldn't have been confused?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but yes.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because when I moved here, I did have a New York accent.
I know, and now it's completely clean.
Completely gone. It's amazing what you do when you live here that long. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College is a nonprofit organization which supports our own Santa Barbara City College. The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College, or SBCC, funds scholarships, childcare, book grants, and other programs. Without these, many students simply would not be able to attend college. There is an amazing range of academic and vocational studies offered at City College, which encourage students to find their passion and their talents. As a donor to the foundation, you have the power to change lives. Please help our community college by donating to the Foundation for SBCC. Call 730-4401 or visit us at sbccfoundation.org to find out how you can help. That's 730-4401 or sbccfoundation.org.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 564-1290.
Or on moneytalk1290@gmail.com. We have in studio with us today John Tine. Thanks for being here, John. He's an attorney, a real estate broker, and a professor of law. And you know, it's interesting when we were thinking about who to have on the show for guests. I had seen so many great posts that you had made on Facebook helping to advise those affected from the Thomas Fire and the subsequent debris flow. And so let's, before we get into that, start about a little bit about your background. So how did you get into law and real estate and Santa Barbara?
Well, I'm one of the fortunate ones who discovered Santa Barbara. I moved here in 1999. At the time, I was practicing law in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I was on the federal bench as a staff attorney for the 10th Circuit Bankruptcy Court there, which, as a young lawyer, was like dipping your resume in gold.
And so I was going to say, that's a great job. How'd you get that?
You know, I was general counsel of a real estate firm, and there was a multi-billion-dollar, multi-jurisdictional bankruptcy that had been filed in the 10th Circuit, and so the federal government had appropriated some funds to hire a staff attorney who had real estate experience. And so I interviewed for the job, and I got along well with the judge, and fortunately she hired me. And I was assigned to a two-year appointment. About a part of the way through, about a third of the way through, I went to the judge and said, you know, I appreciate this opportunity. This is fantastic. But as it turns out, this company cannot be saved. There's just no way that we can save this multi-billion dollar company, and we're just going to need to break it up into pieces and sell it off, and you really don't need me for that. And so she said, well, listen, I'm going to split the time with you. You've got another 16 months on your contract. Take the next 8 months, fly around the world, figure out where you want to work, and I'll be your strongest endorsement. And then, you know, if you leave early, I come in under budget. Well, What a wonderful opportunity she gave you.
That's like a gift of gold.
And very quickly, actually, I discovered Santa Barbara. I came out here. And so it was just weeks later that I was living in Santa Barbara.
How do you compare Tulsa with Santa Barbara?
Well, they're not as different as you might imagine, actually. Tulsa, although it has 800,000 people or so, is very much a small city. And so you'll walk down the street there just like you do here and recognize people that you know. And it's larger. Tulsa's larger. It's not nearly as nice. The ocean's a bit further away. But Santa Barbara is a very special place.
The ocean's further away for the moment.
Yes, at the moment. That's right. We'll see what happens as years
go. So that was quite a leap, though. So you were a young attorney, and yes. Did you find a job before you picked Santa Barbara, or you picked Santa Barbara and then?
I was actually, I had come out to interview with Disney because one of my brothers was the supervisor of feature animation at Walt Disney Company at the time. And so I interviewed, I got through the first two rounds of interviews, and they start with like 160 candidates, and then it's down to 20 or so, and then it's down to three. And I got down to the final three, and the woman interviewing me said, oh, well, Tine, that's an unusual last name. And I said, yeah, I'm Irish-Italian. I get drunk and break my own legs, you know. And she says, no, but it's the last name of our supervisor of feature animation. I'm like, of course, my cover letter says when my brother told me.
Right.
So apparently the Walt Disney Company on that day was not a fan of nepotism and didn't think it would be appropriate for the two of us. So I actually went to my other brother, who's living in L.A., who is an actor. He has a TV show called Bones that just recently wrapped up after 12 seasons. And I was flipping through the paper looking at attorney jobs in California, and I asked him about this city called Santa Barbara, and he just came out of his chair. He said, it's the most beautiful place on earth. You got to go. It's just down the road. It's amazing. And so I drove in for an interview, and as I drove into town, right at this corner, actually, at the corner of Santa Barbara Street and Victoria is where I stopped, and I'm dating myself, but I stopped at the payphone at the Presidio Market and called the law firm where I was interviewing, and it turned out I was basically there, and after having seen the city, I knew there was nothing I wouldn't do to get here.
And your brothers were excited to have a place to stay when they came up.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, great. And then you're also an entrepreneur because you have your own law firm and you also have your own real estate brokerage firm. And so what took you down that path? I remember I was in town about the same time you were and you starting and embarking upon that, which is exciting.
So when I first moved to California, I got myself a real estate broker's license prior to taking the California bar just to be able to have it. And because I got a job right away at a law firm, I really wasn't intending to use it. But what I would do is I would hear of people that were buying or selling a home, and I volunteered to represent them. And everybody knew a realtor here in town. And I said, well, but there I'll represent
like
you for free. Yeah, 1,800 or so. But and I said, well, I'll do it for free. And so I did about 16 transactions in the first few years I was here for just friends, family around town, opposing counsel in some instances. And I just kind of donated my commission to them so that I could really learn how brokerage was conducted in California. And about 4 years after I got here, my dear friend Kevin Goodwin and I decided that we were going to open a real estate brokerage. And at that same time, I transitioned from the law firm and opened my own practice.
Great. And so along those same lines, you offered your services for free, which isn't too dissimilar of what you're doing right now in terms of helping those affected by this Thomas Fire incident and offering to review people's insurance policies.
That's right. We are meeting with homeowners who have been affected, with tenants who have been affected, with property owners who have been affected, either because they've been directly impacted or because they're in a mandatory evacuation zone. And we're meeting with them. We're reviewing their policies. In some instances, we're getting their policies for them from the insurance carrier because they don't have them or they can't get home to get their policies. And the carrier has an obligation to provide the policy once it's been requested in writing. And so we're getting those policies and we're meeting with people and we're doing that gratuitously to just try to help them. Meanwhile, Goodwin and Tyne Properties has placed dozens of families in short-term rentals because they've been displaced from Montecito and the surrounding areas. And we've waived all of our leasing commissions associated with that.
And so for thank you from the community. It's very helpful. And so from those people that are looking for their insurance policies, are a lot of them online? If they are looking for it, if they have a login with their insurance company, can they get that information?
We are finding that by contacting the broker or contacting the insurance carrier directly, that they're able to produce those policies for us much quicker than historically. And so we're getting emails with the policies. We're getting faxes with the policies. So that is moving very quickly.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Warrior fans, just a reminder that you can hear all the action of exciting Westmont College basketball live all season long right here on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. I'm play-by-play announcer John Martini inviting you to tune in again for the next Westmont game as head coach John Moore and the Warriors take another step towards the Golden State Athletic Conference Championship. Westmont College basketball all season long right here on your Warrior station, AM 1290.
The recent flooding and mudslides have had a major impact on our community. Optum is making its 24-hour emotional support helpline available free to everyone. If you or someone you know is experiencing stress or grief and needs someone to talk to, call the helpline at 866-342-6892. That's 866-342-6892. Again, the service is being offered free as long as needed and is open to anyone and will also offer referrals. This has been a public service message from Optum and this station.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures, a stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college. This is beyond a simple donation. It's the opportunity for America to invest in its kids and take an active stake in the future of the country. The return on your investment isn't money. What you get back is knowing you protected our potential. So one day, that potential can grow up to become surgeons and architects, executives and engineers, people who can change the future just by being a part of it. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. A public service announcement brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Welcome Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we're in studio, if you're just joining us, with John Tyne, who's an attorney and real estate broker and professor of law, and offering his services to those affected from the Thomas Fire. And John, I recently saw you, a lot of people who are displaced are renters, and what does that mean for them, and what's required of them? Is it Do they need to keep paying rent? Do they not keep needing to pay rent?
Really,
how does it all work?
Great question. About 60% of our community, as you know, are renters. And whenever let me preface this by saying it always comes down to the lease itself. So we would need to see the lease and make sure it's consistent with this. But I'll speak in terms of the standard California Association of Realtors lease, which has a provision in it, depending on the year that you're dealing with. It's around paragraph 35. And it says that tenants are not responsible for rent during times that the property is uninhabitable. And then it becomes a question of, is it uninhabitable? Is it uninhabitable because of damages to the property? Or is it uninhabitable because they simply can't access the property? Like Neil here, his house survived. He didn't sustain direct impact or damage, but he can't go home because of the mandatory evacuation areas and the public safety areas that have been declared unapproachable right now. And so depending on the answer to that question, the tenant has the opportunity to either terminate the lease. Either the landlord or the tenant can terminate the lease in writing, or if the lease continues in effect, the tenant is the rent is abated for the period of time that the tenant could not inhabit the property.
So abated, what does that actually mean?
That means
mean?
It's not due.
Not due, yeah. Okay. So it's not like they have to pay a portion of it, it's just not due.
It's not due. And so I've had situations, and again, it depends on the lease right. itself, but I've had situations where tenants have prepaid rent. So what we've done with those landlords is we've extended that payment to start counting for February because they weren't able to occupy the property in January.
And so, you know, we live in Santa Barbara where a lot of, you know I rented for years from people who there wasn't a lease. You know, we might have had a lease the first year that I was there, but the second year and subsequent time I was there, it was like very loosey-goosey month to month.
Right.
How are you protected in that situation?
So it's an interesting question because you sort of laid out two different scenarios in your description just now. You said that in some instances there had been a written lease at one point and then it went month to month. And in that situation, the written lease itself actually does continue on a month-to-month basis. So we would simply refer back to that written lease.
So as long as you had a lease at some portion of the time and then you're just paying rent but you're not under any contract, so to speak, it reverts back to that original lease.
Yeah, that lease probably has within it a provision that says at the termination of this lease, if there is a holdover, we call it, the tenant remains in possession and continues to honor the terms of this lease, basically, that they will continue on a periodic basis, that being a month-to-month basis. That's different than somebody simply being in on a verbal lease. Technically
right.
speaking, a verbal lease is something that is unenforceable in a sense because the statute of frauds requires contracts related to real estate to be in writing. But we would look at that then on a quantum merit basis. And basically, we would determine that there was an agreement for rent in exchange for possession of the property. So for the periods where possession is not possible because the home is damaged or uninhabitable, or you can't access it, then there should still be the same result that there would be an abatement of rent during the times that you cannot possess the property.
And then from the landlord's point of view, so here I have these renters and, you know, this debris flow came in and they're in a mandatory evacuation, whether or not my house is destroyed. How do I go about protecting myself as the landlord?
So then we turn to an insurance policy and we look at whether or not the landlord has an insurance policy. And in this case, and we had quite a lot of talk about this off the record, but in this case, we are advising people to make a fire insurance claim because it is in fact the fire that has caused all these damages. And a lost or an interruption in income, be it a business or a rental that you have, is a covered risk. It is generally in these insurance policies, particularly if you've advised your insurance company that you have a rental and that there are tenants who pay you monthly for the possession of that property, that usually is a damage to which you are entitled due to this protected or this covered risk, this covered peril, we call it.
And what if your insurance company didn't know that you were renting it, but it just never occurred to you to let them know? You just continued to carry your homeowner's insurance.
So,
because I've got to imagine a lot of people are like that.
That gets into a different question, right? Mm-hmm. Then we start looking toward the insurance broker and we start saying, well, what did you know about the property and what questions did you ask? And was it a situation that the person who owns the policy simply failed to disclose the fact that they're renting the property for whatever reason they may have made that decision? Or was it that the broker really didn't ask the right questions or didn't provide them with the right coverage? And it's funny because it ties back to the fiduciary duty article that we were talking about earlier today. And then it can become a question of why didn't you have the right insurance to protect you from this? Was it because you didn't get the right advice to procure that insurance? And so,
well, usually if you're using a broker, you have a primary residence that you're also insuring.
A lot of times,
right.
Yeah. That's the case.
And so then if the broker that sold it to you was aware, then should you be covered?
You would make those claims. I mean, I think I have to preface all of this by saying every situation is unique and you really should rely upon the opinions of an attorney who you have officially retained. I'm not giving legal advice over the airwaves because that's not appropriate or ethical. But generally speaking, I have had situations in the past where somebody was not sufficiently covered for a fire loss that they had sustained. They had procured the policy decades before. They never really increased the coverage. And we, in that case, we did turn to the broker. And the broker's errors and omissions insurance policy ended up paying the property damage that was not covered by the primary policy in place.
That's a great point because that's something that we cover with our clients at Arlington often, especially since, you know, the T fire had happened. You know, what does your fire insurance look like? Go talk to your broker because it's not something that we do personally, but we want to make sure that our clients are covered so that they aren't suffering loss.
Sure,
beyond
it happens
what
often where people might have a home that
they've
owned a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they've got a policy limit of $2 million saying the house is now worth $4 million. There are some terms in the insurance policies that may address that. There's a distinction on actual cash value, which is defined under the policy as the value to repair the property less a reasonable depreciation of the property. However, in the event of a total loss, actual cash value is the fair market value of the property. And so we walk through that with folks.
You know what's interesting? I think there are, you mentioned before that there are about 1,500 real estate brokers in Santa Barbara, and there's probably a very large number of insurance brokers. And when people look at a choice to choose any type of broker, many times it's about friendship.
Yeah.
And it's not about qualifications. And it's just like, you know, why do pilots make so much money? 95% of the time, an average pilot can deal with any situation. It's when there's a problem that the uniqueness of and the capabilities of a professional makes a difference. And I think one of the interesting things about this event is that it will be more likely that people will be more discerning when they choose any type of intermediary, any type of advisor, because there is going to be clearly a relationship between what you ended up with and who advised you.
We certainly hope that that is one of the effects of this. That's why in our real estate brokerage, we are very proud of the fact that we have all attorney-trained realtors. And we tell people that our agents are attorney-trained, and it makes a major difference when working with a real estate broker. And you're right to say that most people make the decision on who to hire to buy or sell the biggest asset that they're going to own in their life based on, oh, it's my neighbor's niece, or it's my college, high school, you know, friend's sister or something of that nature.
It's my golf buddy.
It's my golf buddy. And they don't really interview many people. They don't look at the qualifications. They don't find out for those 5% of those planes being in danger, you know, is this a broker that I can trust to handle my sale competently and protect me through the process? So that's a really great point, Neil.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food.
Cha-ching. You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behavior. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit savethefood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
So, John, before the break, we were talking a little bit about renters and landlords and what they should do. Now, regardless of where you are, what's kind of that first step to in filing a claim or figuring it out? Because I know a lot of people have a relationship with their insurance company, like, yeah, here's my document. I don't talk to anybody.
Right. It's a great question. And so you should always start by looking at the policy and determining whether or not you've sustained a covered loss, a loss that is provided for by that insurance policy. And again, we are advising people that this is a fire claim. Most insurance policies that people have, be it renter's insurance policy or a homeowner's insurance policy, do cover as a risk losses sustained because of fire. And so we are taking the position, and it's because it's true that without the Thomas Fire, we would not have had the loss of vegetation and roots and trees that led to the mud flow that has caused so much damages.
Well, I have heard that the coroner is adding to the death certificates, you know, whatever the cause of death was as a cause of the Thomas Fire.
Okay,
so
that's good to hear.
I think that pretty much.
And I think that Bill Brown would be correct to say that if he is linked this mud flow to the Thomas Fire, it is absolutely true. It is exactly what happened here. And you mentioned my Facebook posts earlier, and the first one that I had put out there about this incident is that people should understand the efficient proximate cause rule of California. California follows a law that says, irrespective of what ultimately causes damages, in this case for many Montecito residents, it was mud flow that caused their damages. But irrespective of what ultimately caused your damage, we will look to the efficient proximate cause. What is it that really is behind the fact that you had damages? And that, for most people, in fact, I think for all people in Montecito, was the Thomas Fire itself, not the subsequent rains, the subsequent mud flows. Those are all a direct and proximate cause of the Thomas Fire.
So what should people do who don't have any damage? Should they file a claim just in case there's another event in 2 weeks? Should they just file a claim, or that's not necessary?
Well, if they're filing a claim now proactively in the anticipation of sustaining damage later, it is somewhat untimely. However, most of those people are affected currently because they've been displaced. They're not in their homes. They're incurring additional living expenses, ALE, which is a covered damage under the policies. And so if you've been displaced because of the mandatory evacuations and you have a homeowner's insurance policy, you may be fully entitled to benefits right now. I know a lot of carriers are saying no. I know a lot of carriers are claiming that deductibles will preclude payments at this point. But my advice to people is don't take no for an answer. You pay an awful lot of money for insurance premiums over your lifetime. I've talked with many people that have come in to see me recently who have had insurance policies for 30, 40 years that they've never made a claim on. And I ask for them to think about the amount of money that they have actually paid. The entire business of insurance is collecting premiums and investing those premiums, oftentimes into the vehicles that you guys talk about, like bonds and stocks and annuities and things of that nature. But the insurance companies are commonly the lenders for real estate loans. They're the ones who put the money, the capital, into the system to lend people money to buy homes so that they have to buy insurance policies and pay premiums.
Well, and we often say that insurance is for the risk that you can't afford.
That's right.
And this is a risk that you can't afford. And so I hope that these policy owners are looking at it as this is the reason why you have insurance. So if your insurance carrier is saying no, it's beholden upon you as or all of us really as a community to make sure we hold these companies to task and accountable for what you're insured for, what you're paying for.
That brings up the most recent topic. So we've seen a progression of questions from people, right? Initially, it was the question you've just asked, which is where do I start? And the answer is get your policy, make a claim, make a fire claim. But after that, we started having the landlord-tenant questions, and now we're seeing a lot of questions about bad faith. What happens if my insurance carrier is denying this? What happens if my insurance carrier is not providing the benefits that I am entitled to? And the truth is that insurance carriers do have an affirmative duty of good faith in their insurance claims adjustment. And so they have to provide prompt responses to claims. They have to provide detailed reasons as to why they are denying a claim. If they are denying a claim, that can be appealed. They have to provide you with an appellate process. A lot of times there's an arbitration element involved there, but we are encouraging people to hold the insurance carriers accountable because it is something that you paid for. It's like buying a rain poncho that has a hole in it and then feeling bad that you don't want to return it because why, right? You've bought a product. It should work for the intended purpose.
One of my first jobs was a paralegal at a law firm that dealt in bad faith. They were insurance defense, which is why I'm now not an attorney because that's a tough business. And so in bad faith cases, insurance carriers take very seriously because they're expensive.
Very expensive.
And when the verdict is found not in their favor, they are required to pay a lot of money usually.
Yeah, normally if it's a breach of contract case, then it's the damages that were due or the benefits that were due to the homeowner plus interest. But if it is a bad faith case, it gets into damages, interest, emotional harm that was caused, attorney's fees, and sometimes punitive damages, which some people will refer to as treble damages. Treble damages really is three times damages. Punitive damages can be much higher than that, depending on the egregiousness of the defendant's conduct.
And oftentimes juries
don't particularly love
insurance carriers because we all deal with them. Right. So it is a tool that homeowners have in their tool belt, so to speak, to feel warranted and give yourself a little bit more.
We all think back to the movie Class Action or to the reality of Ford Motor Company having made a decision back in the 70s or 80s to leave the Pintos on the road because the cost of paying the wrongful death claims caused by the defective cars would be less than the cost of recalling those cars. And that's what punitive damages are really meant to address. That's why they exist, is to
help people make the right decision.
Yeah, create a consequence for making that egregious a decision.
So, in terms of insurance and how it all works, what for those people who perhaps don't have any insurance, where does that leave them? What is the government offering?
So the government right now, FEMA, the government has declared this a national disaster, which is different than how it initially began. It did begin with FEMA declaring this to be a disaster, but that was only providing for benefits to the cities and the counties for the emergency response. Now that's been amended after the mud flow has caused this much harm to provide individual benefits as well. And those individual benefits are for temporary housing, relocation expenses. There are some unemployment benefits for people because we don't think about this. You have hundreds of Montecito estates that have been damaged and that people cannot inhabit, but you also have hundreds of gardeners and housekeepers and domestic workers that are out of job right now. And so FEMA benefits have now been extended to individuals, which includes the individuals that have been displaced and those that have lost work as a result of that. Generally speaking, there's about a $34,000 cap on those individual policies, but that will really help the people that were tenants who have been displaced and the like.
Now, are they needs tested? So if you are wealthy, but you've hit it's $34,000 for...
That's generally the cap. And so it's not a check for $34,000.
Right, right, of course not.
That's up to that amount for damages that you've sustained.
And the other place damages where there's likely to be arguments is business interruption insurance, where the business person is going to claim that they lost X amount of money, and the insurance company is going to say no. And that's usually always an argument that takes place.
I'm dealing with that right now for a number of clients. Mm-hmm. And there's something even more interesting about that, which is the initial mandatory evacuation zone did not include Coast Village Road. But when the first responders assessed the situation and realized that they needed to keep people out of there as well, it too was vacated, but it was not part of the original order. And so you cannot retroactively amend a mandatory evacuation order. So a lot of the carriers were pushing back on the businesses and saying, you were not in a mandatory evacuation area, so we're denying your claim. So the sheriff has been good enough to say, listen, it was not initially declared as part of the mandatory evacuation area, but they were in effect evacuated because of the fact that it was a dangerous place to be, and we asked them to leave. We required them to leave. And now, of course, they're within that area.
Well, the morning after, once the mud flow reached Coast Village Road and the freeway and in the Montecito Inn, it still was. Wasn't it at that point that the order changed?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that everybody was a little too busy addressing the emerging situation, and so there wasn't, I believe, an official change in the zone until later. And it did, of course, expand over time. But it was, we were more interested as a community in them providing evacuation and rescues that were undergoing than going back
changing
and doing the
policy
paperwork.
Of it, right.
You're listening to Money Talk, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hospice of Santa Barbara is there to help when we're adjusting to living with a life-threatening illness, facing death, anticipating the death of a loved one, or healing our grief after a death. Hospice of Santa Barbara can provide the emotional, social, and spiritual care needed in a supportive, compassionate environment. Hospice of Santa Barbara provides professional counseling for individuals and has many support groups and programs for adults, teens, and children. Services are free, made possible by our community's generosity and by all of the highly trained, wonderful volunteers that give of their time to help those in need. If you would like to make a donation, become a volunteer, or support the important work of Hospice of Santa Barbara, or find out more about hospice services for you or someone you love, please call 563-8820, 563-8820, or visit our website at www.hospiceofsantabarbara.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we have in studio with us John Tyne, who's an attorney, a real estate broker, and a professor of law here in Santa Barbara. And, you know, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the Thomas Fire and all the aftermath. And so, John, you know, a lot of people are asking about real estate values and what is going to happen to Montecito. Are people's homes going to drop in value? And what do you think is going to happen?
It's a really great
question.
Now,
I realize it's predicting the future, so we won't hold you to it.
So we'll, with that caveat, I think in the short term, of course, we're going to see an increase in values because of the practical reality that we have hundreds of people that have been displaced, many of whom cannot return to their homes now or ever. And want to stay in Montecito and want to stay a member of this community. So I think you're going to have a bit of a shadow market there of buyers that is not typically within our market, not to mention, you know, it's a supply and demand reality is that you have an increase in the number of buyers. Meanwhile, you have a decrease in the supply because a certain percentage of those homes might have come online and might have been available. So I think you'll see an immediate uptick to the market is my anticipation. It was interesting to me that in 2018, the hottest market in the country is, and I can't recall exactly if it was Santa Cruz or Santa Clara, but it was a community that had been affected recently by the Napa fires. And it is deemed to be the hottest market in the country right now. And I think we are going to see a similar reaction here in Montecito, where we're going to have a lot of people who recognize that this may be an opportunity to come to Montecito to get into this market that otherwise is rather difficult to get into. And I really do not anticipate that we're going to see a
but it's such an emotional
negative
buy, though. A home purchase is emotional.
It
and
is.
So I would think most of the out-of-town buyers are going to say, you know, gosh, like, even if it's a deal, how do I want to live there in the aftermath?
Yeah.
You know, so
you'd
so there is two sides to the coin.
Sure, there may be some people that are saying that. But for those who know, and, you know, you've got Ellen on television regularly talking about what an incredible and special community Montecito is, because quite honestly, it is. And you have Oprah endorsing that. You had Das Williams on her show recently, mm-hmm. on I believe
Ellen's show
right. recently, and everybody's talking about that. And just look at the way that our neighbors have come together. Just look at the way that everybody is supporting each other right now, opening homes, providing clothing, providing for all their needs right now.
A friend of mine started the Santa Barbara support network, and basically it's if you can go online and Google it, it's definitely worth it to sign up to get a $50 gift certificate for somebody to do, whether it be a meal or whether it be clothing, to help these displaced people. It makes you feel better. It makes, you know, it makes the world a difference to these people.
I mean, the University Club is offering free counseling tomorrow and on Friday.
John told me I need it.
I told you that would be good. You said you were sad about the situation.
It's
sad about this.
Right.
You know, firms like my own, like Goodwin and Tyne Properties and Law Offices, John Tyne, we're providing free services to people right now to help them to deal with this. That's the community in which we live.
John, thank you so much for being here, but also thank you so much for all you've been doing for the community over the last few weeks. And I'll wish everyone the best in this horrible, terrible time. We look forward to better times. You've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll see you next week.